just make sure that, like,
Committee on Energy Environment to order. Thank you all for coming to testify today. This is the first time that the House of Representatives has had a chance to touch this bill. And I just wanted to let folks know my perspective on the origins of this bill that sometimes get forgotten once they come through the Chamber of Origin. And that this bill is in large part a memorial to our colleague Senator Doc Bates, and he worked on it for many sessions, as I understand, although I wasn't here for all of them, and I think he had the best interests of the state and the resources which he valued in mind when he was working on these issues. And he and I happened to share a passion for fly fishing and rivers. So I'm very happy that this bill has come to this committee, and I'm very happy for my committee members to be able to hear it with me. And I'm also pleased that it came over on a strong vote from the Senate with the amendments that I hope accommodate so many people's concerns. So with that groundwork laid, I would like to invite Senator Dembro up, who is the...
Open a public hearing.
Oh, I have to first open a public hearing on Senate Bill 3 and welcome our colleague, Senator Dembro, to introduce the bill and tell us about it.
Welcome. Thank you. Thank you very much, Chair Helm. I'm Michael Dembro. I represent Senate District 23. That's northeast, southeast Portland. And I represent that district in the Senate, where I also chair the Committee on the Environment and Natural Resources. And Chair Helm, Vice Chair Power, colleagues, it's my pleasure to bring before you Senate Bill 3A, which deals with the longstanding question of how the state of Oregon should permit the practice of suction dredge mining in our rivers and streams in a way that protects endangered fish and other important natural resources. It's a carefully crafted compromise, the result of a great deal of work by many people and ultimately over many years, as the chair alluded to. And I'll try to frame it up for you, the background to this bill. Senate Bill 3 resolves an issue that the legislature has been wrestling with for a number of years now. It's the result of two parallel developments in the first decade of this century. A growing number of Californians coming to Oregon to mine as a result of prohibitions put in place in that state, and a growing concern within the scientific community about the impacts of suction dredge mining on natural habitat ecology, with adverse effects on fragile fish populations. These twin developments led inevitably to Senate Bill 838 in 2013. Senate Bill 838 put a moratorium on rivers and riparian areas in much of the state starting in January 2016 and lasting until January 2021. We are currently under that moratorium. It also created a study group convened by the governor, then Governor Kitzhaber, consisting of state agencies, tribes, federal representatives, and representatives both from the mining community and from the environmental community, with the goal of reaching consensus on where and when mining could occur in a way that would not be harmful to habitat, ideally in time to avoid the need for the moratorium. So hopefully that resolution would be achieved before the moratorium kicked in 2016. The study group did yeoman's duty on this effort. I observed it. I was at that time the chair of the Environment Committee for a period of time, I was able to participate in some of the meetings along with colleagues Senator Boquist and the late Senator Bates, both of whom were very committed to solving this issue. I can tell you that the participants on that study group worked long and hard, but in the end, they did not reach consensus. So it was left to the legislative process in 2015 and 2016 to try to settle the question of where mining could occur and where it could not. Despite really heroic efforts by Doc Bates, we weren't able to get there in those sessions. So what we have here in Senate Bill 3A is a policy that incorporates the findings of the Senate Bill 838 study group, takes the framework proposed in the 2015 and 2016 bills, as well as the introduced version of Senate Bill 3, and it simplifies it. In the Senate committee's public hearing on Senate Bill 3, we heard very clearly from many people that we absolutely must protect fish and fish habitat through smart state policy. But we also heard that the bill was overly complex, overly restrictive, and overly expensive for miners and for the agencies. There was concern that it ultimately would extend to all the waters of the state, as well as broad areas adjacent to streams, and would effectively prohibit mining in this state. That was not the intent of those who'd been working on this policy for years, and if that was going to be the result, then clearly this bill needed work. So, working with a small bipartisan work group and with ODF&W, DSL, DAGAMI, DEQ, over the next 6 weeks, we were able to put together the policy that is before you today in 3A. In a nutshell, it stipulates that in the streams where there is sensitive, protected fish habitat, you cannot mine. In all other streams, you can mine, though, of course, you must obtain a permit and mine responsibly. Let me put the major elements of the program on the record for you. First, it prohibits the moratorium that's currently, it repeals the moratorium that's currently in place. Second, it prohibits motorized mining in areas designated as essential indigenous anadromous salmonid habitat. It's been a few weeks since I've said that, but it used to roll right off the tongue, which is also considered vital to the recovery and conservation of Pacific lamprey. The prohibition extends from the stream bed up to the ordinary high water line. It does not include streams that are upstream from natural barriers to fish, like waterfalls or certified human-made dams. The maps identifying this habitat are created periodically by the Department of State Lands through a public process. Non-motorized mining, such as gravity dredges, siphon dredges, and, of course, panning, are allowed. On all waters. The prohibition can be waived for valid mining claims on federal land if the courts rule that this prohibition violates federal law and constitutes an unlawful taking. If the courts so rule, mining can occur under a DEQ general or individual permit. However, our legislative council believes that it is likely that the prohibition in this bill will stand, as long as the reason for the restriction is to protect essential salmonid habitat. Third, in the remaining streams and in all the riparian areas adjacent to streams, mining is allowed. But the miner must obtain a permit from DEQ, which includes specified time, place, and manner conditions articulated in the bill and in the general permit. These conditions are designed to make sure that all miners act responsibly and are not a nuisance to neighbors. DEQ can require payment of a permit fee up to $250 to cover its expenses for administering and enforcing the permit. Fourth, the bill allows enforcement of the prohibition and permit through a citation process. House colleagues, there will be some for whom even this sensible program is a step too far, even if it means relief from the current moratorium. Even though it will permit mining in many areas from which miners are now barred. Many miners object to the notion that they are harming the environment. They believe that they are not. In fact, you will likely hear arguments that they are actually improving fish habitat by loosening up the stream bed material, removing lead sinkers, removing trapped mercury. They base this belief on their own direct experience and the experience of some wildlife managers. Colleagues, based on my experience with these miners in the Senate Bill 838 study group and in their Senate testimony, I believe that we can both respect their perspective and disagree with their conclusions. There is a growing body of scientific evidence documented in peer-reviewed scientific journals that makes it clear that we need to treat in-stream suction dredge mining with great caution. Even when restricted to times of the year that salmonids are not present and spawning, suction dredging can disturb and damage habitat and invertebrates that are essential to their success. In the words of Dr. Matthew Sloat, Director of Science for the Wild Salmon Center, in his testimony before the Senate committee, and I'll quote, "The scientific literature has identified a number of impacts to salmon, trout, and their habitats from suction dredge mining. The impacts occur across a variety of life stages, ranging from direct and indirect mortality during egg and larvae incubation to impacts to the food resources and cover habitats that are essential for juvenile salmon and trout." End quote. Dr. Sloat's conclusions are based on a broad review of the scientific literature with the following findings. Suction dredge mining disturbs cover habitat for salmon and trout. Suction dredge mining reduces the reproductive success of Pacific salmon. Suction dredge mining results in direct mortality to incubating eggs and juvenile fish. And suction dredge mining increases sedimentation in downstream habitats. By loosening up the stream bed strata, suction dredge mining actually makes the stream beds more vulnerable to degradation from powerful winter runoff. And while it may seem logical that sucking mercury and capturing it in the sluice box would be good for river health, in fact, there is growing evidence that the opposite is true. In the process of displacing it from the substrata where it is safely lodged, the mercury can degrade, break up, and be dispersed in the water. And it's not just listed fish that need to be considered. We are also seeing growing interest, particularly among our tribes, in the restoration of Pacific lamprey and recognition among fish biologists of the importance of freshwater mussels in filtering and clarifying river water. House colleagues, no one knows better than we that public policy is all about balancing competing needs and competing interests. We have a strong tradition of mining in this state, and those who participate in recreational suction dredge mining have created their own sense of community and continuity. These are good people. But Oregon also has a powerful interest in restoring and building our salmon runs. Salmonids are a keystone species for our environment. Maintaining their viability is a huge part of our tradition as a state. All the many facets of our sport fishing industry revolving around salmonids add hundreds of millions of dollars to our state economy. And finally, as we all know, for our Native American brothers and sisters, these fish and all that they represent carry deep cultural and spiritual significance. Passage of Senate Bill 3A will allow both of these traditions to continue. Mining will continue where it is safe to mine. Fish habitat will be protected where it must be protected. This bill strikes a solid balance in allowing miners to keep pursuing their passion while we also protect native fish species and encourage their recovery. That's why it passed the Senate with strong bipartisan support. For all these reasons, Mr. Chair and committee members, I urge you to support Senate Bill 3 in its A engrossed form. I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Senator. Do we have questions for the Senator, committee members? Representative Benz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator, for bringing this most interesting bill. In Section 4, down in Section 4, Sub 2, it indicates any river in the state containing essential habitat. Are there any streams that would be left out?
Yes, there are many. And I think DEQ can address that, or somebody from the agency, I think, is going to be talking. Yes. Many of them will be, in fact.
Follow up. Right. So when I look at it, it would appear to me, because it's talking about to protect essential to the recovery, if you're looking just at habitat, that would be most streams that run to the sea, perhaps not those that run into Harney Basin, for example, because they don't go to the sea. But if we're just looking at habitat and not at the presence of the fish, is the DEQ going to say that those rivers above the dams where fish can't reach, at least at this point, are excluded by virtue of this language or included? Or
they would be excluded. Where fish cannot go, that is not covered by the prohibition.
In a follow-up. And I'm just worried because the bill would suggest that the focus is on habitat. Doesn't say that there have to be fish there. So I just want the record to be very clear. Yeah. This is not intended to focus just on the existence of the habitat.
Right.
There has to be a fish there to enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you're trying to get at with the intent. That's the intent of the bill.
It is the intent of the bill. And you know, as I mentioned, this is based on maps that are produced by the Department of State Lands periodically that reflect the conditions of, you know, whether there are fish there, what's deemed to be essential salmonid habitat.
My final question, Mr. Chair, I just want there not to be any confusion, because when I read it, I'm confused, and I don't want to be confused. I want it to read as you are saying it should. And I'm just wondering, was this issue raised in the Senate and then?
It absolutely was, yes.
Okay.
And as the, the language really reflected the evolution of the work on the bill. In the bill's initial form, as I mentioned, not every inch of water in the state, but a lot of the waters of the state would have been covered. The language of the amended version, large parts of the state will be open to mining.
Thank you.
Further questions? Representative Brocksmith.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator.
Yes.
Just some clarification questions. Which agency in the state declares a river or stream ESH, essential salmon?
Yeah, it's the Department of State Lands. And I believe that they do this work in consultation with Department of Fish and Wildlife and,
Well, what are the qualifications for DSL and ODF's ability to designate a river or stream or essential salmonid habitat?
It's a public, as I understand it, it's a public rulemaking process that they go through. They develop the maps, they modify the maps, and then the maps become public and are subject to public comment for a period of time, and I believe a hearing as well.
Last follow-up.
I'll just let you know that next up as a panel are representatives from DEQ, ODFW, and DSL. So if your question is a technical one, we might want to wait for them.
Thank you. And lastly, and I think you probably could answer this. So would the bill cover any newly created essential salmonid habitats or newly designated ESHs?
No, this bill just builds off of what the state has deemed to be essential salmonid habitat for the purposes of protecting listed fish.
My question, I guess, I'm sorry, I didn't articulate it correctly. If the state deems that there are new rivers or streams or expands the ESH to incorporate more rivers or streams, would they be covered under this bill?
Yes, they would be.
Further questions, committee, before we move on? Senator, thank you very much for introducing this bill. Now I'd like to invite up Karen Tarno, Russ Stauff, and Eric Metz. Go right ahead when you're ready.
Good afternoon, Chair Hellman, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Karen Tarno with the Department of Environmental Quality. I did prepare a presentation, but Senator Dembrough did such a good job of covering the bases that I don't think I have a whole lot in here that we need to really focus on. There are a couple things that might be helpful for the conversation. One is I do have a map of the prohibited areas and some semblance of the number of river miles that the prohibitions apply to. We also have a definition of essential semiotic habitat here, maybe to help illuminate the conversation about the ESH questions.
Can you go ahead and explain that right away?
What I'd like to explain is that the expert on that is sitting to my right. And I'll flip through to the slide that has it.
Since that's fresh in our minds, I think we might as well see if we can answer that question and be sure to tell us what the consultation is with all of the agencies, state, and if there are federal, let us know about that too.
Absolutely. Chair Hill, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Russ Stauff, Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, Rogue Watershed Manager based in Central Point, Oregon. And I may have to rely on my colleague Eric Metz from DSL. Of course, essential semi-monitored habitat, the statute, is a Division of State Land statute, and they do the rulemaking on it and administer it. Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife houses the data and qualifies and maintains the data that's applied towards ESH. And so we keep a database on fish presence in Oregon for all different fish species, even introduced fish species, for a variety of reasons. But among those fish species that we track native anadromous salmonids, so salmon and steelhead trout. That we have different categories of qualifying the data before it can be included in the database to make sure that it's valid and to check its validity. Anadromous salmonids have the most rigorous qualifications, if you will, for inclusion. And for essential salmonid habitat to be listed, or the distribution of salmon and steelhead anadromous salmonids to be listed in our database, is the current distribution. So we're not talking historic distribution. It is based on fish presence, and further, it's parsed into three types of habitat. So it's identified as spawning habitat, rearing habitat for juveniles, and migratory corridors where it might connect them. Oftentimes, there's not a lot of distinction between migratory corridors and rearing habitat, because many species will rear as they move downstream just before they smolt, and so there'll be overlap of rearing and migratory corridors. Anadromous salmonid habitat and presence of fish can be qualified one of two ways, one of which is direct observation by a professional fisheries biologist, and that can be, if it's on federal lands and not on state lands or private lands, that can be a federal biologist as well as maybe a biologist from a private timber company. If it doesn't include ODF&W, we will confirm that as the state's fisheries biologist. And so the vast majority of stuff that's identified, of habitat that's identified, is based on direct observations by professionals. There is a provision for concurrence of opinion classification, so you can designate essential salmonid habitat or the presence of anadromous salmonids to be included in ESH through a concurrence of opinion. This is not used much anymore. Early on in ESH's establishment, it was used because we didn't have really broad-reaching understandings of fish distribution on federal lands and some other lands. And so when we first got started on it, there were some determinations made based on concurrence of opinion. A concurrence of opinion meant that we had to have two professional biologists agree that that habitat would have been representative of the current distribution of anadromous salmonids. One of them had to be an ODFNW biologist. Oftentimes this came up on federal lands, and so we would always consult with the federal agency. If it's private land, we always consult with the private entity, whether it's a, you know, a commercial entity or a private entity. As time went on, we don't use the concurrence of opinion much at all anymore. The vast majority of it is based on direct observation, where biologists go out in the field, use a backpack electroshocker, and determine if the fish are present. We always coordinate again with the landowners, whether that's the federal agency or not. And we have further, over the years, corroborated much of what was based on concurrence of opinion. So the vast majority is based on direct observation.
If I could ask a question at this point, is there any nexus with critical habitat where there's a federally listed species? Do you consider those?
Chair Helm, the statute, and again, this is DSL's domain, but the statute, then what comprises essential salmonid habitat are any anadromous salmonids that are on a state or federal list designating concern. So that can be federal ESA, it can be state ESA, it can be state-sensitive species, and I think it's being determined it can include other lists, like a U.S. Forest Service list of species of concern that they may have for consideration. So DSL determines what are the appropriate lists to apply. We provide the habitat on that. Much of anadromous salmonids in Oregon are listed under one of those species, you know, one of those lists, of course. And so what's included in ESH covers most of the current distribution of essential of anadromous salmonids in Oregon.
Okay, that helps.
Can I ask a clarification?
Okay.
Federal critical habitat, is that, that's more expansive than the state's determination of ESH, isn't it?
So when the federal government lists a species under federal ESA, of course, they have to designate critical habitat for the recovery of the species. Generally speaking, there's not much difference between them, but there is a little bit of difference occasionally under critical habitat designated by the federal government for their ESA. They will include habitat upstream of an impassable artificial barrier that we may not consider. They typically don't look at going upstream of federally authorized dam projects, those sorts of things. But there are some discrepancies between how the state manages fish passage barriers. We don't require you to comply with fish passage law if you've got an old grandfathered, if you will, facility, unless you do something to bring it to modify it, and that triggers compliance. And so there are some situations where critical habitat designated under federal ESA is more expansive than ESH, but or our distribution, but it's pretty minor overall.
Great. Well, Karen, let's go back to you, and thank you for allowing me to interrupt your presentation.
Absolutely. Chair Helm, as I said, the only new stuff I have in here really is some additional background on the regulations that are in place without all the Senate Bill 838 or what this bill would propose. I can we can go over what's in DEQ's permit, as well as when it triggers a DOGAMI permit, and how the other agencies are involved, if you'd be interested in that, and cover kind of some of the conditions and restrictions that are in place without this bill.
Already.
Yes. And then also, as I mentioned, I can flash up there the map that shows the extent of the prohibitions that are proposed by the bill.
Yeah. Would that take five minutes or so?
Yes, sir.
Okay. That would be great.
Great.
I've got about 20 people that want to testify today, so I'm anxious to get to them as well.
Great. Thanks. So, Eric, could you actually, we'll start one slide back, please. And first, I'll just mention placer mining. Placer mining can involve activities both in water and out of water. Suction dredging, when we talk about suction dredging, we're talking about working the placer that's in the wetted perimeter of the streams. Placer is a deposit of heavier metals, often precious metals, that are usually winnowed by water to collect them in an area, and thus that makes an attractive place to mine. Above ordinary high water, there's also a similar kind of activity that occurs, except that the miners will use either a motorized pump to use groundwater or water from the river to sluice their materials up outside of the rivers. The existing, next slide, please. There are a number of existing regulations in place in the state, both through DEQ and some other statutes. First bullet there, actually, it's incorrect. I said prohibited state scenic waterways. Motorized suction dredging is not allowed in state scenic waterways. There is a clarification in the bill that there's motorized suction dredging, and there's also non-motorized suction dredging using gravity or siphon dredges. So those might be allowed in scenic waterways, but at a very limited extent. DEQ's permit is a federal Clean Water Act permit. It's called our 700 PM permit. Has to be renewed every 5 years. We're currently right in the middle of a permit term. Our permit and the permit conditions apply to motorized and non-motorized suction dredging. So they apply to the siphon and gravity dredges as well as the motorized ones. We do not authorize, through our permit, any dredging on tribal reservations or on rivers that are boundaries to reservations. That's not ours to authorize. And then there are also limits on the, through DSL's rules, on the size and amount of materials that can be moved in ESH waters. If, and I'm going to go into a few of the other conditions in the 700 PM permit on the next slide. If somebody wants to engage in the mining activity in a way, manner that does not fit these general permits, they can potentially apply. They can apply for an individual permit, and I'll say a little bit more about that in a minute. So some of the specifics in DEQ's permit that's currently in place. Suction dredge mining is limited to the open water work periods defined by ODFW, and that keeps them out of the river when the eggs are present. In theory, in truth, I believe. We limit turbid discharge. Obviously, ours is a water quality permit that governs the discharge of wastewater. We have some restrictions on how they can dredge and how they can move materials in order to protect the banks and channel structure. Some conditions about how they handle the oil and gas to minimize the potential for any kind of spill. If they encounter fish eggs, mussels, or lamprey, the best management practice is to stop what you're doing immediately and move. And just since 2015, we've required permittees to provide their locations, their geographic specific locations, and also to identify their permit numbers on the dredge. And this is a helpful tool for OSP or others who are out in the field checking for compliance. One last thing I'll mention. So our general permit is not available if you want to suction dredge mine on a waterway that's impaired for any kind of toxics or sediment or turbidity. In theory, you could apply for an individual permit for those waters, but in practicality, we think it's probably financially as well as perhaps technically not feasible. So we consider it to be pretty much a prohibition. And on the next map, next page, you show a map. These are the waters that DEQ's permit does not authorize suction dredging based on impairments. The green ones, the greenish ones, are ones that have been in place for a couple years. The red ones are waters that are newly affected this year because of some additional impairments that were determined and finalized last year. Next slide, please. And in terms of suction dredge activity, here's the number of permits we issued in the last number of years. I know people talk about the California moratorium. I think that was in 2009. Interestingly, for the people who applied for our permit, our permit does not really show, when we look at the proportions of Oregonians, Washingtonians, Californians, and others, our data for those who applied for permits does not really show a big blip of Californians coming in. That said, there might be people that are mining without a permit that very well could have had an impact, particularly in the Rogue area in southern Oregon. I won't go into the upland placer mining. That's not part of the bill anymore. It's regulated by DEQ, and if it's a larger one, it's regulated. It's required to get a permit from DOGAMI. And please, Eric. Skip over that one. Next one. This is a picture that shows the current moratorium that's in effect. This is a Senate Bill 838 moratorium that started in 2016 and goes through the end of 2020. I've got a map, next map I'll show you, has not just yet, that has the whole river base on it, so it gives you a better sense of the proportion. And those dots on the river, on the map, are suction dredge mining locations that have been identified by the permit applicant. So that kind of gives you an idea of where it's happening and where it is relative to the sensitive waters. And next. And this, I'll end on this one. So this is the dark purple ones are the rivers where the Senate Bill 3A prohibitions would be in effect. There's not a lot of difference between the extent of this and the existing moratorium. They're in northeastern moratorium because bull trout are no longer in the permit. About 25% of the bull trout habitat waters do not fall under the prohibition. The others do because they're coincident with ESH. And then also the other significant part is most of the mouths of rivers. In the moratorium, it started at lowest spawning and up from there, whereas this, because it's ESH, generally it will often go down to the mouths of the coastal rivers. And so up at the top there, the number of river miles, about 20,000 river miles. That's very similar to what is existing with the current moratorium. You figure there's about 100,000 river miles in Oregon, depending on what map layer you use. And there's about 3,000 additional river miles that where suction dredge mining can't happen for other reasons, whether it's impaired waterway or scenic waterway or tribal waters or something. So in effect, about 23,000 river miles would be areas where suction dredge mining would be prohibited if this bill passes.
Repeat that again.
If this bill passes, there will be suction dredge mining will be prohibited in about 23,000 river miles in the state. That's roughly 23%.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
And I think we're just here to answer questions, if there are any.
Committee members, do we have questions for this panel? Representative Holby.
Thanks. Just real briefly. So on this map, the red dots representing where there's active suction dredge mining permits, I would assume. Do those stay in place if this bill were to go into effect?
Sure. Chair Helm, Representative Holvey, the suction dredge miners are required to apply every year for their permit. And with that application, they're required to submit their geographic coordinates. And we review those to ensure that they are in valid areas. So if new these prohibitions would not take effect until 2018. So they can continue to mine in allowable areas this year, and additional or different prohibitions would kick in 2018, and we ensure that we don't authorize mining in those locations.
Okay.
Further questions? Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And now I understand that the phrase that I was asking the senator about is a term of art, and it would be expanded only under certain circumstances. Perhaps you can, I think you shared a few with us, perhaps fish passage on the Snake, for example. If that was done in the current Idaho Power Dam relicensing, would that change would that be seen as an opportunity for the department, or not an opportunity, a mandate for the department to revisit those waters that have been designated essential habitat? Or I think you have a phrase for it.
Yes.
Chair Helm, Representative Bentz, essential salmonid habitat we generally refer to as ESH. You're correct. If we were to restore through whatever action Anadromous salmonids in Oregon, salmon or steelhead, to their historic habitat, their current presence there then under the current statute for essential salmonid habitat would cause that to be included. I would add that when DSL opens up periodically the ESH list for public rulemaking and changes, there are both deletions as well as additions made to it regularly. We've often found that, say, some of the judgments we've made in the past, we found that maybe we misjudged a barrier. We adjusted those over time as we've evaluated it. There have been species come off of lists, and we've removed them from ESH as well.
Follow up. So there's currently a program of reintroduction being carried out as part of the relicensing activities on the Idaho Power projects up in, I want to say Pine Creek, but I may have that wrong, above the lower of the Idaho Power Snake River dams. The concept there is to not introduce an ESA listed species, but instead the attempt is to select salmon that are not so listed. Am I understanding correctly that the fact that those fish are now there because they're going to be placed there would not trigger this kind of review?
Chair Helm, Representative Bentz, if they're not listed federally or state, then it would not trigger their inclusion. Their presence would not be required to be included, would not be authorized to be included under the statute.
Follow up. And if a mistake is made and somehow ESA fish are placed in those rivers, would that trigger the requirement?
Chair Helm, Representative Bentz, I'll have to get back with you on clarification of an experimental reintroduction, but typically the department has not considered fish to be back within their historic habitat until we've got them functioning as a population and not in an experimental mode where we have to trap and haul them or something. So I will have to confirm that and get back to you, Representative, but I do not believe that experimental status where you're mechanically moving them would trigger their inclusion into ESH.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much for being here and helping us understand this bill better. I'm going to call at this time, folks. I've got about 20 people that want to testify, and we've got an hour left. So it's worked well for us to put folks under a time constraint. So I'm letting you know. At the beginning, I'm giving everybody 3 minutes, and we'll try to get through everybody. And I'm going to call one panel up, and then I'm going to get to the folks that are directly after that are more than 100 miles away. So I'm going to try to get you out of here within the next half hour if you want to go. So can I invite up Paige Spence, Matt Sloat, and Troy Brandt?
Good afternoon, Chair Helm and committee members. For the record, my name is Paige Spence. I'm the director of the Oregon Conservation Network, coordinated through the Oregon League of Conservation Voters. Each session, we bring pro-conservation legislation to the legislature, and this year we have 6 legislative priorities, including the state's budget, and the Senate Bill 3A is one of them. So thank you for hearing us today. Senate Bill 3 is so numbered in honor of the late Senator Alan Bates, who Representative Helm mentioned earlier, and Representative March's district covers half of that district. Senate Bill 3 is named for Senate District 3, and we're very pleased to be here in honor of Senator Alan Bates. Alan Bates championed this bill for the first time, the moratorium, back in 2013, which was when I was a staffer for then-Senator Jackie Dingfelder, who was chair of the Senate committee at the time, so I kind of cut my teeth on this bill, and it's pretty special to be here back before you today in this capacity. My colleagues next to me will be able to talk about the science behind this bill and why it's necessary, and I just wanted to expand a little bit on kind of where we were this session and where we are now with this bill. At the beginning of session, the bill had more restrictive conservation values in place. Most notably, the bill included protections for bull trout and freshwater mollusks, and as Karen from DEQ mentioned, it also encompassed both riparian and in-stream mining. And at this point, it's just immediate permanent protection for in-stream mining for Pacific lamprey and salmonids. This bill is you know, really just protects those beds, to answer Representative Bence's questions, that provide critical spawning habitat for the threatened species. And there are statutory definitions and rule definitions of essential salmonid habitat, which I will send to the committee after after the committee hearing, just to clarify. One other small thing that this bill does is amends the enforcement process. Until now, under the moratorium, any violations have to go through the courts, through the district attorneys. And as we know, our court systems have limited resources. And so this bill amends the enforcement procedure by just creating a citation. And then it also is a real compromise bill from the session. We've been very pleased to work with a variety of stakeholders, obviously conservation group support, but the Pacific Coast Federation of Fishermen's Association has been with us as well, and we're very pleased to have their support, along with the Northwest Sports Fishing Industry Association. And this bill is not a ban on suction dredge mining, as the agency has specified. It just works to find a balance between the unique cultural heritage that is mining, as recognized by the legislature in Senate Bill 838, and the significant risks that mining can pose to the health of streams and native fish. So we're really just protecting the most sensitive streams and rivers, and which, according to DEQ, is about 21,000 river miles, and there are more than 100,000 river miles in the state of Oregon, just to put that in context. So suction dredge still can occur with a permit and the applicable condition in around 70 to 75% of Oregon's waters. And with that, I think I will just go ahead and turn it over to my colleagues. Thank you.
Thank you. Chair Hellman, committee members, thank you for the opportunity to testify in front of you in support of this bill. For the record, my name is Matthew Sloat, and I'm the Director of Science for the Wild Salmon Center. We're an Oregon-based conservation group, and we work to promote the conservation and sustainable use of wild salmon across the Pacific Rim. As somebody with expertise in salmon and watershed science, I'm familiar with the scientific literature related to the effects of suction dredge mining on rivers and streams. And my background includes a PhD in fisheries science from Oregon State University. And for the past 20 years, I've studied relationships between native trout and salmon and their habitats in the Rocky Mountains, Pacific Northwest, and Alaska. Today, I'd like to focus my testimony on the potential negative effects of suction dredge mining within the context of salmon and steelhead recovery in the state of Oregon. So, Wild Salmon Center works to protect Oregon's most intact salmon and steelhead watersheds before they are degraded, because our experience is that it's far easier and cheaper to protect healthy watersheds rather than to try to fix them after they're broken and in need of restoration. We call these places, these healthy watersheds, salmon strongholds, and we see them as anchors for general salmon and steelhead recovery within the state. Stronghold rivers are identified through a collaborative science-based process by scientists and managers from both federal and state agencies, including the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. And some examples of salmon strongholds in Oregon are the Illinois River, the North Fork John Day, and the Wenaha. We believe that based on the scientific literature, suction dredge mining poses a threat to the state's salmon stronghold. And as such, the likely impacts of this activity, if not regulated, can make conservation and protection and recovery of the state's salmon resources both more difficult and costly. The scientific literature has identified a number of impacts to salmon and their habitats from this activity, and Senator Dembro summarized some of my previous testimony on the specifics of these impacts, so I won't go over those currently, but happy to answer any questions about those. So I just ask that as you address the challenge of balancing the health of the state's salmon resources with other interests, that you consider the documented negative effects of suction dredge mining during your decision-making. And I thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony on this important issue.
Thank you.
Chair Helm, members of the committee. My name is Troy Brandt. I am the recent past president of the Oregon chapter of the American Fisheries Society. We represent over 700 fisheries and aquatic resources professionals in Oregon, the Pacific Northwest, and really we have members scattered around the world. Today I'm testifying on suction dredge mining. We recently completed an updated white paper on the effects of suction dredge mining that was submitted as written testimony earlier today. Based on our review of the suction dredge literature spanning the past 30 years, we have reached several conclusions related to the potential suction dredge mining effects on Oregon's fisheries resources. First, suction dredge mining effects channel stability and habitat complexity by modifying the channel bed, removing habitat-forming features such as boulders and large wood, and disrupts channel bed surface armoring formation. Suction dredge mining can also affect all life stages of anadromous and freshwater resident fish, from direct mortality of eggs and fry to harassment of migrating adult salmon and steelhead. Suction dredge mining operations directly and indirectly affect fish inhabiting mine streams. Oregon is also home to a wide diversity of lamprey. We have anadromous as well as resident species of lamprey throughout the state. Lamprey, which are culturally important to Native Americans, rear in freshwater for up to 7 years and are susceptible to suction dredge mining, entrainment, habitat modification, and heavy metal accumulation. Lastly, suction dredge mining potentially removes legacy mercury from mine sites, but this mercury, if not disturbed, likely would remain sequestered deep within the channel bed sediments. Mercury that passes through the dredge and is discharged back to the mine stream has a high toxicity and may be converted to methylmercury. Methylmercury is a neurotoxin that accumulates through the food web as higher level predators consume contaminated prey. So in summary, suction dredge mining has various effects on stream ecosystems, and despite the widespread practice across the western United States, the long-term effects of the practice remain poorly understood. Dredging effects may be most harmful in watershed-supporting sensitive species that are also affected by other human activities. And additionally, the reintroduction of legacy mercury into the aquatic environment may be harmful for aquatic organisms, wildlife, and humans that consume contaminated fish. Thank you.
Any questions for this panel committee?
Thank you very much for your testimony. We appreciate you being here. Next, I'd like to invite up Mr. Louis Pitt. And we'll need an extra chair, but Jake Crawford, Stan Petrowski, and John Ward. Mr. Pitt, nice to see you again.
No, Chair.
Go right ahead when you're ready.
Good afternoon. I'm Jan Schwicht, Louis Pitt, Jr. I'm a Director of Government Affairs for the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs. Here, pro-salmon, individual treaty rights, way of life for us for thousands of years, both on and off reservation. When I first came down here about 20 years ago, a lot of folks, oh, yes, we agree to your treaty rights, but they were all thinking on reservation. When we cut our deal with the United States of America, which in turn gave lands to the state of Oregon and counties and cities and towns, we reserved, not given by anybody, reserved the rights we brought to the table, which were treaty rights, reserved rights that we had long before there was the United States or state of Oregon. And so off reservation, we do have the rights. So that means we depend on land managers and water managers off reservation to help manage the elements, especially with fish, one of the mainstays. Every about four times a year, we have major ceremonies, which starts off with water, salmon, deer, roots, berries, and then ends up with water again. So we honor the gifts, as we call them, big G, gifts from the Creator. And that has worked for us, again, since time immemorial for thousands of years. Support very much the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs support Senate Bill 3. And there's another off-reservation rights reservation. Is the Umatillas have similar treaty language as to ours, and I hope they're going to be talking about this also. But I only speak for Warm Springs. And since time immemorial, we've depended on gifts from the Creator, the fish. We've fought since you folks have come here for the salmon restoration of habitats, the harvest numbers, and access to the river, and for continuing our way of life. We even today invested millions of dollars to Fish Passage Project at the Round Butte Dam. It's a high-tech project that deals with mixing the waters that's more attractive to the big fish coming back and for the little fish going down. to be able to get to the right waters at the right entrance to be able to pass through a dam and also come back. And as you know, those the dams on the river have been devastating, and on reservation, which we're part owner of both Round Butte and the Pelton Dam, is we're trying to help there, as well as being partners for the last 30 years that I can document. I started working in natural resources in low-tech restoration, low-tech approach and management to just help work with habitats. And lamprey, nusuch, asum, it's called in the Warm Springs language, one of our main medicines. It is one of our foods, very important. We're just learning. We're all just learning about lamprey. And a lot of passage mortality due to dams and due to, I think, a number of challenges, agriculture and dams like that type of thing really causes a barrier that impacts both salmon, native fish like rainbow trout, and then lamprey. So we're real proud of our record, and the dredge mining really is introduces a higher risk of damaging all of the elements connected to the health of the fish populations and lamprey populations. We do have, and I think we're going to be tracking, have worked with that task force that Senator Dembra mentioned to protect our interests on rivers that border the reservation and are on the reservation. We do our own thing, but we also, again, in that 10 million acres that we gave to the United States, which in turn are, 13 different counties, is that we retain the rights to work with people to get to the table to help protect the fish, water quality, quantity, and things like that. We very much support, I think, improving the mining permit process. The tribes need to be included on, I think, in those rivers that border the reservation, and definitely also on the ceded lands, the 10 million acres of 13 different counties. The mining is incompatible with, I think that we really have problems, and we're glad that you know, we will be contacted at various parts in the process, and then also we will be watching closely the rules making of this to make sure the spirit of it is protected to again protect our interests. So we support, I think, the partnership that is continued under there's a Senate bill called 770. That deals with partnering and working with the state. In that 10 million acres, half of the ceded lands we gave to the United States is under federal control, and the other half is what we're doing here within the state. And so within the state, we are doing our best to work together in a preemptive, proactive type of approach rather than attorney to attorney, client to client, and that's us talking, the tribes talking to the state agencies that have managed the elements of our way of life, such as water and fish habitats. So thank you again very much. Support the Senate Bill 3, and I did get to work with the late Dr. Bates, and I think the honor to him, but also the practicality of this is excellent, too. I think it helps all of Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you, Louie. Go right ahead, whoever's next.
Chair Helm, Vice Chair Power, and members of the House Energy and Environment Committee. My name is Jake Crawford, and I'm the Southern Regional Manager for Native Fish Society. I also am a constituent of Representative Marsh and came up from Southern Oregon to be here today. Native Fish Society is a grassroots nonprofit guided by the best available science, and we're dedicated to the protection and recovery of wild native fish. I'm here today on behalf of our 3,000 members and supporters and our 90 place-based volunteer river stewards who help safeguard their home waters across the state. Thank you for the opportunity to show our support for the amended version of Senate Bill 3, which will establish the long-term regulatory framework necessary to reform suction dredge mining practices and help protect sensitive native fish populations across Oregon. Scientific studies have identified that this practice can negatively impact fish populations, such as disrupting their food sources, altering their habitats, and exposing them to disturbed deposits of legacy mercury. Science-based institutions like the Oregon Chapter of American Fish Society, who testified earlier, have submitted recommendations for these reformed regulations. And likewise, the National Marine Fisheries Service recognized these negative impacts when they included recommendations in the final recovery plans for Oregon's federally listed coho salmon. These suggested improved suction dredge regulations to prevent negative impacts on coho, with special closures and restrictions on methods and activities. Native Fish Society supports these recommendations to prohibit this activity in sensitive habitats while still allowing in-stream mining in other areas of the state. As such, this bill is admittedly a compromise. We would like to see stronger protections for waters that are not listed as essential salmon habitat, such as with the federally listed bull trout populations in Northeast Oregon. However, we do feel that this is a reasonable bill and has benefited from a long legislative history, as well as the collaborative processes that helped refine this bill over multiple legislative sessions. Without this reform, to allow this harmful activity in areas with sensitive native fish populations would be counter to the best available science. And the millions of public dollars that have been invested from state and federal agencies, public and private groups, and the individuals who have committed to restoring our region's iconic fish species. So thank you for the opportunity to be here today to show our support.
So you're a cleanup matter.
Yep. Right ahead. Chairman Helm, Vice Chair Power, and other members of the committee. I'm John Ward, representing the Rogue Fly Fishers. I've been the conservation chair for about 10 years, and I'm really interested in two different aspects. One is the adverse impacts that suction dredging has on the fish that I'm personally committed to try to maintain. And the second is to look at the financial implications of recreational fishing. I think that there is a component here that we should sensitively respond to within Oregon. What I've done is take the liberty of looking at each of the 16 counties represented in the members of this commission and tried to quantify what the investments have been made by Oregon to try to maintain fisheries and compare that to perhaps some of the implications and recreational outlays, as well as the other expense associated with fishing. Compare that perhaps to mining. Just briefly, the best data that I have access to is 2008. I'd like it to be more current, but it's not. It was a Runyon study done for ODF&W that quantified the streams, freshwater streams that are of interest to this committee, interest in this bill, represented a $69 million a year outlay by recreational fishing. And I compare that to 2008 data, the same year in California. In the entire state of California, the output from the, or contribution, perhaps you'd say, from the miners in California was less than $5 million. Well, the difference between 69 and 5 makes a big difference in Oregon, and it certainly makes an opportunity for jobs, and I think we ought to take a look at that. The state of Oregon's lottery contribution and other funding acquired by Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board in your counties, there's some overlap, a couple of Lake County overlaps and a couple of Multnomah overlaps, and aside from that, I didn't have a way to disaggregate that. Basically, the state has invested $282 million from 1999 to the year 2016. That's a sizable investment. Does it show a return? Well, when you take the contribution that fishing makes in the same territory in freshwater of $69 million a year, and you also add in the $90 million, roughly, that or $44 million from saltwater, it shows that we have close to $3 billion return on a $282,000 investment. So from my standpoint, it makes sense to look at something that has a tenfold return in a state that is often financially challenged. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Representative Helm, Vice Chair Power and Committee, thank you for the opportunity to be here. 12 inches.
Make sure you identify yourself for our record.
Oh, yes. My name is Stanley Petrowski. I live in Tiller, Oregon, southwest corner of the state, very heavily impacted by the dredge mining. If you allow a little subjectivity here, I've ranched for the better part of 40 years. And made my living through various venues, including mining, to supplement our lifestyle. And so I think I have a handle on those realities. But I'm here today to represent the South Umpqua Rural Community Partnership. I founded this organization back in 2004. It's a collaborative 501c3, broad spectrum, engagement of the community to revitalize rural Oregon. I've been involved in addressing the dredge mining issue since the moratorium in California starting about 2010, I would say, is when I first started to get engaged in this. I can't take the time to articulate in detail some of the threats that dredge mining poses in our immediate area, but one of them would be the Spring Chinook Run on the upper South Umpqua River. There's 120 individuals returning from a run that used to sustain the Umpqua Indians. When the California moratorium took place, immediately, there were mining claims put on the oversummering index pools for those fish. I watched the Senate bill voting process, and with all due respect to the good senators, Cruz, in particular, they voiced their concern that this was a bill that was an attack on rural Oregon. I can assure you they were not representing the very large constituency of rural Oregonians that are engaged in the collaborative process of restoration in the Umpqua Basin. I can also say that partnering with the various agencies, state and federal, participating with private landowners, we've invested over $11 million in habitat restoration in the hope of vitalizing an economy based on tourism. And the general consensus from our group is that dredge mining interferes with that in a big way. Thank you.
Questions for this panel? Thank you all for being here today and traveling so far to share your thoughts. Appreciate it. I'm going to take a brief respite from the public hearing. Do I need to recess the public hearing? I'm going to recess the public hearing just briefly. And for any folks here that were attending, intending to participate in the work sessions for Senate Bill 19, Senate Bill 328, and Senate Bill 812, I'm carrying those all over to next Monday. So I'm going to carry over Senate Bill 19 to Monday, May 8th. Carrying over Senate Bill 328 to Monday, May 8th. And I'm carrying over Senate Bill 812 to Monday, May 8th. I had hoped to get to those today, but I think we're going to need the time for the public hearing. With that, I'd like to invite up Tom Atkinson, Mark Wagnall, Don Young, and Tom Kitchener. Hope I got all those names right. And I'm going to reopen the public hearing on Senate Bill 3. Welcome, gentlemen. Yeah, grab a chair.
or we'll grab one for you, whichever one is loose up there. Whoever's ready, go right ahead.
Welcome. Chairman Helm, committee members, I'm Scott Atkinson. I represent myself as a claim owner in Southern Oregon in your district, and we have 460 acres claimed. And those 460 acres are now considered essential salmon habitat, even though there are no record of salmon in that area because of the expanded region of the DEQ, DSL, and Fish and Wildlife. All stream reaches that are unobstructed coming from saltwater are now considered essential salmon habitat. In the springtime, or even actually in October and November, there's rain events that occur. You've had some serious rain events down in Southern Oregon. Last spring, we went down to, my girlfriend and I went down to Grants Pass, and on the second day down there, we went up and checked the claim conditions from the year before where I had been dredging. The log jams that had been placed by the stream enhancement groups were gone, washed downstream. The area that I had dredged for about 4 weeks was full of tree debris, limbs, and there was no evidence of any claim activity, work, or anything else in the area that I had been dredging. Now, you hear the numbers in the millions of dollars that have been spent on stream enhancement projects. In Southwest Washington, on the East Fork of Lewis River, they spent $750,000 to do a stream project. The first fall storm came in and blew out every bit of that project, wasting $750,000. Now, I've asked, Gary Loomis and I are friends, that he used to have the G. Loomis fishing rods. Gary Loomis and I talked to Washington Fish and Wildlife. We've talked to Oregon Fish and Wildlife about getting analog pellets. In the science that a lot of these people behind me reflect, they say that the invertebrates don't return fast enough. We're asking for help. The miners would like to have assistance from these fishing groups to re-nourish the streams after our dredging activities are done, so that we can speed up the recovery of the invertebrates before the fall fish come and the spawning and the spring hatching. But as of yet, we are the black sheep of the state, black sheep of the economy, because 600 miners scattered throughout the state of Oregon are responsible for the decline in fish returns that have been declining since the 70s. I commercial fished in my high school years out of Newport and Pacific City, and the Bolt Act and the Magnuson Act reduced fishing because of declining numbers. Those numbers have never returned, except in the last couple of years in the Columbia River. So what is the problem? The problem is not the small-scale miners. There are other activities in the ocean or something else going on that's causing the decline or mortality in the smolts, and it's not from the small-scale miners. Now, they say that the small-scale miners are responsible for killing eggs and smolt and fry. If that is a fact, then Fish and Wildlife is not telling the state or the legislators the truth about the work windows. The work windows have been done by science professionals with the fisheries department and say these streams are safe to work in at that time. And so the propaganda that keeps being published in the newspapers and in their literature with their organizations to get more donations to fight the miners, they say that we're out there dredging up eggs and small fish. And I thank you, and I'll wait any questions.
Thank you. Whoever's ready can go right ahead.
Do you want to go now?
Go ahead.
Okay.
You're on the list.
Mark Wagnell, M&J Mining, Grants Pass, Oregon, Josephine County. Ever since I moved to Oregon in 1990, I have been placer mining for gold using a suction dredge. You all know what placer gold is? This is what it is, okay? This is about 6 ounces worth in one piece that I personally mined in Josephine County a few years ago. That is the economic benefit of dredging, okay? There it is. There's no question. This is not a hobby. This is a business. For me, mining was always a part-time business since Oregon law made it seasonal because of the need to protect anadromous fish and their egg nests. Part of my retirement planning was to continue mining until age forced me to stop and then sell my mining assets. For the past 22 years, I have filed a business schedule C for M&J Mining. This year, I did not file a schedule C, nor even a return for that matter. I did not have enough income to be required to pay income tax. Thus, the state of Oregon, through this bill, SB 838, has destroyed my business and my retirement, which was stemmed from that business, that part of my retirement. Since my mining assets that I currently own have little or no market value, which my original intent was to sell them when I could no longer physically work them. You know, I'm a man of the book. And there's many lessons there and many principles of life that we can learn. And I want to share with you a couple principles that affect all of us. The Apostle Paul wrote in one of his letters, "Do not be deceived. God is not mocked. For whatever a man sows, this he will also reap." The law of the harvest has never been repealed. Or if you prefer, karma is still alive and active. What goes around comes around. Around 700 BC, 2800 years ago, the prophet Isaiah, 15 seconds?
Go ahead and finish right up.
I'll just read this through then.
I think you're close to the end anyway, but
yeah.
Don't feel rushed.
The prophet Isaiah gave this warning to a group of lawmakers. I read it because nothing ever changes, and you are today repeating the same errors that were made then, and thus the same warning applies to you. Isaiah warned, "Woe to you that enact evil statutes. This is an evil statute because you do not consider the needs of the miner, our financial needs and impacts. You're only considering the fish. There's no balance. And those who constantly record unjust decisions so as to deprive the needy of justice and rob the poor of their rights. I have a congressional right to mine my mining claim, and you are taking it. By government definition, I am a poor man. I don't even need to file an income tax return. Yet you are still trying to rob me. Further, as the prophet recorded the words of Yahweh, our Creator, and robbed the poor of my people of their rights, you have sown destruction. Having destroyed my mining business and my retirement, you will also reap destruction for what you have sown." Isaiah continued his warning, "Now what will you do in the day of punishment and the devastation which will come from afar? And to whom will you flee for help? And where will you leave your wealth?" Isaiah was a prophet of God, and this prophecy indeed came true. "I am not a prophet nor the son of a prophet, but I can assure you with certainty that we will all reap what we sow. It is the law of the harvest, or if you want, karma. And today, with this bill, you are sowing more destruction on the miners of the state of Oregon. And I suggest, therefore, that you stop sowing more destruction and reject this current bill under consideration." Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. I'm Don Young. I'm from the Illinois Valley. I've been mining for about 30 years. I'm also on the Illinois Valley Soil and Water Conservation District and the Watershed Council. And the reason I mention the latter is because in all the 20 years, we'd been doing restoration projects like one fellow just mentioned. And once in a while, when we have representatives from state agencies or federal, I've asked the question, what's wrong with the watershed? And they can't answer it. It's kind of a moot thing. You don't bring that up. And also with the science that's brought up today, you know, it's selective. It always says dredging could harm, has potential for, under certain circumstances. But like the other fellow just said, there's an in-water work period. We don't kill fish unless we get our fly rod. And I like worm and bobber myself. But anyway, there was a study done in 2003. It was concluded, a two-year study by the OSU Professor Bailey. And we expected it to be another spotted owl for us. You know, oh, we got to stop dredging because it's no good. But after his study, his conclusion was it was a waste of taxpayers' money. He said dredging was either innocuous to beneficial. There's not one dredger I know of who's ever killed a fish. And I wasn't sure where I was going to go on this today, but it was brought up a few times about mercury. Well, the scientists say that we only get 98% of the mercury out. We don't throw it back. We don't throw the lead back. We don't throw the gold back either. But the thing is that mercury is there all the time. And it may be down on the bottom with the gold, but every year there's a flood, it's out. Turbidity brings it up. You watch the rivers, they're muddy. It's going all the way down to the bottom, bringing the mercury up. Well, if every dredger pulled up 98% of the mercury, caught that, there would be less to be, put back in the environment. So anyway, there's less mining. That was DEQ put that on the board. Well, the reason there's less permits. Well, there's also less mining. And one of the reasons there's less permits is because it requires you to waive your Fourth Amendment rights. There's so many stipulations in it, so many rules from expense to, rights that, says, what do we do? We've been legislated out of existence, and no harm has been showed from dredging. I'm going to leave it at that.
Thank you.
Chair Helm, Vice Chair Powers, and committee members, I thank you for this opportunity. My name is Tom Kitcher. I'm president of the Waldo Mining District, who the district just celebrated our 165th birthday last month. We were formed in 1852, before Oregon was a state. That makes us probably the oldest government agency in the state of Oregon, authorized now by the 1872 mining law. I could probably talk to you for hours, and I know I don't have that time. A couple of real quick comments just on some of the testimony I heard here already today. Yes, there's lots of stream miles in Oregon that are not essential salmon habitat. We're down in Josephine County, which, out of all the counties in Oregon, gold mining built Josephine County. 90% of the streams in Josephine County are essential salmon habitat. So when you showed the map of streams, here's the places we could go. It looked like southeastern Oregon would be great because there's no essential salmon habitat out there. But there's also no gold. We only mine where the gold is. We didn't put it there. I sat also on the governor's study group and attended every meeting. The only thing that group reached a consensus on was to remove the designation of a Class A misdemeanor and go to a citation. That was the only thing the consensus was reached on that committee in seven meetings for 7 months. There was this talk about the increase in miners from California because of the California moratorium. 838 talked about an increase in the number of permits DEQ was issuing. In 2004 and 5, DEQ issued 1,984 permits for suction dredge mining. After that, the number fell down into roughly the 600-700 range, simply because we filed a lawsuit against the state of against DEQ because the permit, we believe, that they're issuing is being issued under the wrong authority of the Clean Water Act. Just so happens tomorrow at 9 o'clock, there's a hearing on that case in the Oregon Court of Appeals. Since then, the numbers have slowly risen back up, but still have not exceeded anywhere near the highest number I have numbers from in 2004 or 5. We've talked about recreational mining. That's a privilege. The state could just ban it. What triggered Senator Bates was the dredging in the Rogue River up by the town of Gold Hill. That was all recreational mining. It was an allowed activity by the state. It is not mining under the mining law. So I guess my time is up. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Questions for this panel? Thank you for being here today.
We appreciate
your testimony. Thank you for traveling. Next, I'd like to invite up Tom Wolf, Liz Hamilton, and Bob Reese. Go right ahead, whoever's ready first.
Chair Helm, committee members, for the record, my name is Tom Wolf, the executive director of the Oregon Council of Trout Unlimited. I'm here and I'm honored to be representing the 3,200 members of Trout Unlimited in Oregon. We range across a wide spectrum of people. We're Republicans, we're Democrats, we're rural people, we're city people, we are blue collar, white collar. We all come together with one issue. Two issues, two beliefs. We love angling, the sport of angling, and we love to protect the habitat of fish, of cold water fish such as salmon and trout. Well, and one thing that we see is that there are never just one cause of the demise of salmon and trout. There's a lot of causes, and we need to deal with all those causes. And SB 3, which Trout Unlimited supports, deals with the problems impacted by suction dredge mining. In my submitted testimony that's online, you can see the six reasons I list that Trout Unlimited sees suction dredge mining as a harmful to streams by the actions of suction dredge mining, so I won't read that. And also with the conclusion, I won't read that because we're running dangerously short on time. I just want to conclude by saying that this is a good bill. This is a bill that's been worked on over a lot of time over in the Senate. We urge, Trout Unlimited urges that this bill goes forward, and thank you for allowing me to testify.
Thank you, Chair Helm and Vice Chair Power and members of the committee. I'm Liz Hamilton. I have the honor of serving as the Executive Director for Northwest Sport Fishing Industry Association, and I'm here to express our support for Senate Bill 3. NSIA is a trade organization representing over 11,000 family wage jobs in Oregon that are dependent upon abundant and healthy fishery resources and the habitats that sustain these fisheries. Our sport fishing industry serves over 600,000 customers here in the state. They fish roughly 5.7 million days, and we generate about $1.2 billion in economic activity. Beyond that, though, outdoor recreation is like the second paycheck to everyone who lives here in this state, and healthy waterways are the magnet for those activities. And nothing represents this region's commitment to healthy natural environment than our salmon and steelhead populations, especially in southern Oregon. The commitment to sustaining healthy salmon and steelhead habitats does create great social and social good and economic benefit and bounty to rural communities throughout the state. But I want to talk about fairness and health. from one corner of the state to the other, most of us share responsibility for the various causes of decline for the species. Logging is regulated to protect water quality and stream habitat. Sport and tribal fisheries are tightly regulated to protect fishery resources. Water withdrawals and energy production are regulated. Even rafting is regulated to protect water quality and stream habitat. So where human activities have a negative impact on important fish habitat, we support the effort to conduct these activities in a way that minimizes or eliminates the threats to salmon and steelhead habitats. These activities also involve fee structures and regulations that strive to represent best management practices and the pay-to-pay philosophy that now governs most access to natural resources. To be clear, I did not come here to testify against suction dredge mining. I'm here to support common sense regulatory structure that provides the protections to spawning and rearing habitats and protects salmon and steelhead populations that our industry depend on and that Oregon's defined by. I hope you'll support the compromises in SB3A and that still allows suction dredge mining in many of Oregon's river miles and establish a permitting process outlining best management practices for recreational suction dredge mining. We support the fair fee structure and restrictions that will help ensure these activities will not adversely affect salmon habitat. The health part of this. I'm also here for another reason, and it's a commitment I made to Senator Dr. Bates. I carry him with me in my car everywhere I go. This was important to him. He cared about the health of humans. He cared about the healthy governance, that it was bipartisan in support of healthy rivers. And so I know everyone here in this room cares about it. Whether we are miners or sports anglers or tribal anglers, we all care about it because it's a bipartisan value. So I'm hoping that this bill passes out of committee and onto the floor and is voted for human health, economic health, cultural health, and also to honor a man who cared about all of that for all of us. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Helm, Vice Chair Power, members of the committee. My name is Bob Reese. I'm Executive Director for the Association of Northwest Steelheaders. Also a board member for the Northwest Guides and Anglers Association, 21-year professional fishing guide. We have about 1,700 members in the Association of Northwest Steelheaders. We are here in support of Senate Bill 3. We have a long history of working on the suction dredge mining bill. I think this bill progressed as good legislation does. It takes a lot of time. It takes compromise. A lot of conversations and an understanding of each person's stakeholders' perspective in the matter. This does represent a fair compromise between protecting fish and responsible mining practices. Governor Brown has pledged future multiple use of our rivers, and access being a large issue for the steelheaders, we subscribe to this philosophy. Steelheaders is the Oregon affiliate for the National Wildlife Federation, collectively encompassing 6 million members nationwide. We passed a resolution that closely parallels the tenets that we see in this bill. Finally, I think the fee structure that's proposed in this legislation seems applicable. Sport fishing guides tripled our fees to not only better pay for the services that were provided through the Oregon State Marine Board, but also to bump up enforcement activity to get the bad seeds out of our industry. We're hoping that this fee helps do that. I'm sure the miners, there's certainly very good miners that are respectable to the resources, and they too would like to see their industry operated in a moral manner. So thank you for the time to testify.
Questions for this panel? Thank you all for being here today. Next I have on my list Tom Quintal.
My name is Tom Quintal, Chair Helm and Vice Chair Power, members of the committee. as you can see, that we're pretty small entity. We're not what I'd call a serious special interest group. We're pretty well outnumbered, but that isn't unusual for us. We don't have a big presence with you folks at the legislature. Unfortunately, that's our problem. We haven't had an opportunity to, I guess, inform you more about what we do and the type of equipment that we use. So what I'd like to do is show you that we do give a free service for the state of Oregon. We're, I guess, the only ones that I am aware of that clean up the streams in Oregon, all over Oregon, where we have mineralized streams. This is just one example of some of the fishing lures and monofilament line and lead sinkers and so forth that we remove from the streams. I think this thing is supposed to work. I'm not sure what I'm doing wrong here. I hit the forward arrow. Oh, there we go. Thank you. Appreciate it. And by the way, I really appreciate you guys helping me out with this. I've never done anything like this before. So this is an example of just a sluice box, basically, that removes lead and material out of the streams. I thought these pictures would be interesting because I know you sit there and you're, well, you know, it gets kind of boring, I suppose, for you. But, let's see. Here we go. This is a sluice box that I worked about 2 hours with in my little stream. And as you can see, there's some on the front of that sluice box where all the heavy material drops out. You'll get your lead, your gold, your silver, whatever, and a lot of black sand and debris. But that's just one little example. There's another area from southern Oregon. One guy was working a short period of time. Some of the material he pulls out are lead, bullets, you name it, all kinds of interesting things. That's a 5-gallon bucket full of, not quite full of lead. So we have a lot of lead in our drinking waters that no one wants to talk about. And I've talked to Tom Wolf. I've asked him, you know, what are you guys doing about all the lead that fishermen are dropping in the water? And he said, well, we're trying to work on something other than lead, but that's all I've ever heard from him on it. And here's some other debris that we pull out. You name it, we find it. Batteries, car parts. I mean, it's unreal what we find in the streams. So this is another example of things that are being pulled out of our streams. This is some of the junk along the riverbanks that we clean up. Campers and other people that just plain don't pick up after themselves. This is a lot of debris that we picked up out of the streams. You can see paddles. You can see sunglasses. I mean, it's amazing what's in the streams today. It's just unreal. Now, we talk about river scouring, which means that they talk about geomorphology, that when the miner's in the stream, he's tearing up the riverbanks and tearing up the stream channel. Well, there's a good example of the same stream. That's the South Yuba Fork. That's a high winter flow. When we have turbidity like that, miners, there's no way we could put hundreds of dredges in the water, and we couldn't compete with anything like what's in the waters. So there's a small suction dredge with a plume off the side of it there, and you can notice, I don't know if I can do this little gadget. It has a, yeah, maybe that's it. There's the tail out of that plume, which you can see it disperses really quickly. So there's, out of the South Umpqua right there, buckets of lead sinkers, you name it. So I think at one point here, we're going to have to decide, are we doing a good service and are we worthwhile, or you just want to kill it off? I mean, that's what it's coming down to. Here's another example of a 4-inch dredge, and you can see the plume that he's putting out there. I wish I had a little further back picture of it, because that plume pretty much dissipates. One last thing I'd like to mention. I know you've been favoring some of the others for long testimony, and I appreciate that we are so short on time. We are not only having problems with the special interest groups to kill mining off, but we're also having the same issue with DQ. We started out with a 4-page permit, 3-page really. We've got everything from 303D streams. We've got 33 now, Atlantic Scenic Waters. Back then we only had 14. We've got a restrictive permit. We can't hardly mine anymore. It's really bad. Now, Gordon Anderson, I left his letter with each one of your offices yesterday. I hope you had a chance to read that, to see what we've been going through with DEQ over the years. It's not a good picture for the miners. And they claim they're neutral with mining, but if you read what's in that letter, I think you'll find that they have not been. They haven't been fair to mining, and it's kind of sad, really. So I'd be more than happy to answer any questions that you may have. I think that was my last slide anyway. Yeah, it was.
Okay.
So thank you again, Beth. I appreciate you guys' help. It's been very, very helpful. Thank you. Any questions?
Questions for Mr. Quintel? Representative Reske.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Quintel. I didn't catch the organization you were with.
Oh, I'm a small-scale miner. I have a mining claim. I've been mining for 30 years, and yet to have anybody say I'm doing something wrong. You know? So,
thank you very much.
You bet.
Further questions? Okay. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you. Now.
Those were very interesting slides. I appreciate it.
Okay.
Last panel here, Mr. Palazza. Rhett Lawrence, Bob Van Dyke, and Frank
Armendariz.
Armendariz. I knew better than to try that.
Are we ready? I'm Phil Plaza. I live in Alsey. I don't represent anybody except myself and my experiences. I'd like to thank the chair for this opportunity and the committee members to speak in front of you. I'm a retired school teacher, lived in Alaska, and we were fortunate enough to get a grant from Shell Oil Company to study the Alaskan rivers. Very fortunate to have Alaskan rivers. We studied oxygen levels, carbon dioxide levels, turbidity. We studied, we took an analysis and inventory of macroinvertebrates, and what we found is that a river's healthy when the macroinvertebrates are abundant and healthy, and therefore the fish are healthy. I'm also a traveler, originally from California. I've heard some things about regulations today. I understand that regulations can be harmful to some people, but I've also seen the Columbia diggings where hydraulic mining washed away everything and there's nothing living there anymore. I've also been up to Sumter where it's now a museum, and it's a museum for a reason because nothing's living there. And the waters are in the Powder River are contaminated with arsenic and mercury. And the fish are, humans can't consume those fish because of those levels. So I've seen regulations that haven't been followed, and I've seen the damage. It's a warning. And so I'm here to support definitely Senate Bill 3. I spoke at the Senate hearing, and I misspoke. I said something about, I used to travel in Oregon. I went up to the Quartzsville River, and I camped at Yellow Bottom, and there wasn't anybody there. 2 weeks, not a soul. That was in the 60s. Last year, I drove along Quartz Creek up toward Yellow Bottom, and it was filled with campers alongside the roads. absolutely packed. And I said, it's because people love the rivers. And I went outside after the talk, and a miner came up to me and said, those people aren't there because they love the river. Those people are homeless, and that's where they're spending their summer. And I was pretty shocked. And he said, we go along and pick up their trash when they're done. They clean those rivers along the side. And so I would like to commend the miners for at least their involvement in helping clean those rivers. But at the same time, I feel like after I was a bush pilot in Alaska, after taking miners with a pick and a shovel, my time is up. I'd like to keep Oregon rivers the way they are, and so I support Senate Bill 3. Thank you.
Chair Helm, members of the committee, my name is Rhett Lawrence. I'm the conservation director for the Oregon Chapter of the Sierra Club. I'll be very brief. I have submitted written testimony, so just wanted to chime in support of Senate Bill 3. We do believe this is good compromise legislation. Obviously, the Sierra Club might have preferred to extend the moratorium on suction dredge mining and you know, end the practice altogether because of the impacts on salmon habitat, but we do believe that this is good, workable compromise legislation, and we support it and urge this committee to do the same. So thank you very much.
I'm Chair Helm and Commissioners. My name is Frank Armendariz. Excuse me. I'm from Eugene. I live in Representative Nathanson's district. I'm a businessman. I'm a river guide, and I sell river rafting equipment, and I also repair that equipment. I get a lot of business from guides and outfitters in the Rogue River area and folks that outfit in southern Oregon. I also sell them equipment and in addition to repairing their stuff. I'm just going to, again, I've submitted a written testimony, and I hope you all take a little bit of time to read that. I have quite a large constituency, and I kind of outline that in my written testimony. I've been president of a number of fishing clubs and associated with guide associations and stuff. And so I don't think that when I speak about rivers and river activities that I don't just speak for myself, but to represent an industry that generates about $3 billion really primarily on the clean water resources that we have here in our state. I do my work in stream, and for that privilege, I have to abide by a whole stack of laws and regulations, both federal and state. The pollen in our beautiful valley today has got me a little congested. I also I'm registered with the state of Oregon, and I've been registered, and I've had to apply for federal use permits in the past. I don't do outfitting on a federally restricted streams anymore, but I have in the past. So I've also paid all those fees, 3% of my income for years and years, to the federal government on money that I made out of their rivers, on their rivers. Again, I'm licensed, and I pay a very hefty insurance policy in order to do that, in order to make sure that any damage that I do along the riverbank, any hazard or any injury that I cause any to my clients, that I'm covered for that. So I'm not here to speak in opposition of dredge mining, but I just want you to understand what the rest of us have to endure to work in stream. And that SB 3 creates logical registration process, application process, the ability for the state to have recourse in the event that damage is done. So I strongly support and hope that you will also consider all those issues related to this particular legislation. So thank you very much.
Chair Helm, committee members, my name is Bob Van Dyke, and I also work for the Wild Salmon Center. You heard from Matt Sloat, our scientist, earlier today. Rather than repeat his comments, he noted a variety of concerns we've got about suction dredge mining, and we're speaking in support of the bill today. I just really want to emphasize what a compromise bill we see this being. The initial version, following Senator Bates' version, regulated bull trout habitat. It regulated the tributaries, prohibited mining on the tributaries to the main stem ESH habitat. It required inspections for endangered species, and it also restricted mining activities on the stream banks. And all of those elements of the bill have been stripped away. We're just down to the core activity in the essential salmonid habitat. So I guess I just want to emphasize that this bill, I think, does represent a real compromise. It's much more narrowly tailored than it was initially, and I urge you to support it. And I thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Any questions for this panel? Thank you for testifying.
Thank you.
Today. Appreciate you being here. With that, committee, that's everyone that has signed up to testify today. Did I?
I got here late. Could I?
Yeah, sure.
Say something?
Yeah. Make sure to identify yourself for the record.
My name's Daryl Anglin. I'm from Grants Pass, Oregon. I have been an avid steelhead salmon fisherman my whole life. My mom was into gold mining when I was a kid when we lived in California. I moved here about 7 years ago. The reality of this situation is, if somebody could show a picture, these fish swim up to you when you're dredging. They are at the end of your sluice box eating the food, whatever's coming out of your...
Just talk to me.
Whatever's coming out of you, literally. I mean, I want to get a picture of it and show it to you. The little fish... Bigger fish, they sit at the end of your sluice box eating the stuff that comes off, and then you go home. Those pictures that man showed are a reality. They are every time you go out, you are pulling mercury, lead, bullets, nails. That's pretty much all I got to say. I mean, that is the reality of it. I am a passionate fisherman. Love it. Been fishing my whole life. So, I mean, I got into both things, and as soon as I got into gold mining, then that's kind of getting stripped away, and I really strongly believe it's for no reason. You don't have to be a scientist to figure out that you ain't hurting a fish if it's swimming up to you and sitting at the end of your sluice box, and, you know, what they're trying to say about it's making the river muddy. Mother Nature does it every year, a millionfold compared to what we're doing. We ain't hurting. I've seen it. Thank you.
Thanks
very much for the opportunity.
You're welcome. Thank you for being here. All right. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on SB 3. Colleagues, thank you for staying a few extra minutes, and thanks to everybody that came to testify today. In a few extra minutes, and thanks to everybody that came to testify today. Thank you. For